Ladies and gentlemen, we are live!
This is the big leagues, okay?
Yeah, step it up.
You're riding the pine.
There's little kids in Australia who want to play cricket, and they're listening to TJ and I talk about sports, say, God, one day I can be talked about on Riding the Pine with Kyle and TJ. And I are on the internet. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's worldwide.
Okay. Really, you have no idea.
With Kyle and TJ.
We're also incredibly modest.
Yeah, we are. We don't have egos, big heads. Listen, we're the best. And if there's anybody else out there trying to stake claim to that, you got to tell. We'll tell them they're wrong.
Sometimes when you're the fight you.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you're the best, you're the best. And that's just the way it is.
We are going to witness the most anticipated match in the history a professional wrestling.
TJ and I, we're grinding away. We're pros. To be honest with you, we pulled off the weeks before you. We'll pull off the weeks well after you're gone.
Who knows what'll take your life.
And we'll pull off the weeks, you know, in the middle when you decide to take random vacations.
Here on this rugged patch of earth called Plataea, Xerxes Horde's face obliteration! Just there, the barbarians huddle. Sheer terror gripping tight. Their hearts, with icy fingers, knowing full well what merciless horrors they suffered at the swords and spears of three...
Listen up, Rome. Your time's past, chump. Move it along. You live in the jungle. Cute. You know what that was clever? 96. It's 2012, guys.
We're showing them it's 2012.
Yeah, Rome.
Get out of here.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Joining you from the far end of the bench, near the water cooler, in overtime, before extra innings, you get the point. Here's Kyle and TJ.
For us, what can you do for the team? You ever heard of my knuckle puck?
I feel like we say this every time. I'm just that seasoning, man. You're the steak, I make the steak even better. I'm the seasoning on top.
It's knuckle puck time!
He winds up! He scores!
Welcome. Another week of Riding the Pine. TJ and I a bit distracted here.
Very distracted. How couldn't you be?
Tremendous stuff. We found a link, and next thing you know, we're wormholing our way looking at pictures of Ryan Tannehill's wife.
Who is the most gorgeous woman in the world, yes, other than my lovely girlfriend.
Of course. Of course. And then next to it, they posted a bunch of the creepiest comments on each photo. Much to our delight.
Oh, man.
Things like, if I had a wife, I'd want it to be you in a zebra apron. That's creepy. And then pictures while she's exercising. That makes it all types of weird. So that's fantastic stuff.
Squats are the key to a great butt, Kyle.
That is true, Bigger Brett on Twitter. Thanks for breaking that down. Oh, boy. I don't even know how to get back to the proper
I don't either.
Link. Well, Riding the Pine, Kyle and TJ here. A lot to get to today. So we got a fantasy football is here, TJ. We've done all of our drafts. You and I partook in three this past week alone, I know.
It was a marathon.
A lot of fantasy football happened this week. By the time the original Riding the Pine draft was around, I was underprepared. I did not forget about it. But I knew I had plans going on, so I knew I was going to be drafting via phone, which is already less than desirable. Was not happy with that outcome. But thankfully, our dutiful listening audience did not disappoint us.
No,
in making sure our teams were still exactly what we had hoped.
It is very evident that all of our listeners turn the podcast off when we get to fantasy talk.
Absolutely. There is not one person who leads this podcast on when they start hearing, listen, when this happens, the podcast listening audience goes to 0-2. And that's only if you and I re-listen to it later.
Which I don't, because I don't need to listen to my own advice. It's in my head.
I already know it. I gave it. I heard it. But it's very evident. especially evidence. And I have a specific gripe, TJ, with the number one overall pick. And I don't, you know what? The pick obviously was terrible. And if you're not a member of the league,
because it wasn't made by you or I,
that's true. The number one pick was made by a team owned by Casey. Now, Casey messaged us saying, can we move the draft later because I can't make it that early? I have to work. And I said, you can't make a 7:30, right? And apparently his computer said it was 4:30. I already should have known. We had a disaster on our hands right there.
He doesn't know the difference between Pacific and Eastern already, on his computer.
He already can't set a clock. That should have been a red flag, TJ. I should have moved on to the next person in the queue to join that spot in the Fantasy Football League, but I didn't, and we paid the price for his fantasy draft, starting with a number one overall pick of a quarterback.
Always a good decision.
And then eventually, I think it was round three where he took the Houston defense, because he's clearly a big Houston fan by his team name. And
just exasperated.
It was comical to a point.
I mean, we were four rounds in, and I had my head in my hands. Just
I was pretty astonished.
I was beside myself, and I kind of felt like following suit.
Yeah,
and just drafting
just make a miserable effort.
Chris Durham in the fifth round or something.
Yeah, just make it worse than ever. And but not to be disappointed, there wasn't. He was auto picked. That I guess that's my gripe. This guy who already could not make it. So I said 7:30. You go, my computer says 4:30. Once I clarified that there's time zones in the world and he understood the idea that Eastern Standard Time 7:30 was going to be the draft slot, TJ, he said, oh, well, that's no problem at all. How could I ever miss this draft in any universe ever? So that's what I thought. Well, come draft time, there we were. Number one overall pick was on auto pick, which was the one major gripe that you and I were going to have going in. We don't like auto pickers.
No, not at all.
This isn't a mock draft in the last three rounds where you just want to kind of see how the first few rounds are going to shake out in terms of who's going where. This is an actual draft for a league for the highest quality screen printed t-shirt to go around, TJ.
Yeah.
This is no joke.
And internet bragging rights, which you can't quantify those.
No. We're already the best on the internet. So for you to even be able to look at the pedestal TJ and I are already up on and brag about fantasy football, that is, you should feel honored.
I mean, you're going to get a place at the table. If you win this league, you'll get a place at the table.
You're going to get a seat. You know what? Maybe we'll give you a couple guest spots next season for your fantasy football advice.
Yeah, and it might be the kiddie table. But you know what?
Absolutely.
That's close to where they eat the Thanksgiving dinner.
Absolutely. Ugh. So needless to say, the draft went miserably.
It sure did.
I thought I drafted quite a winner. I was real happy with my team until Yahoo really gave me just an unchecked kick right to the nuts.
Well, now you know how it feels, don't you, Kyle?
Mine was worse than yours. I got a D.
Yeah.
They said I'm going to go 2-12, which for a guru is insulting.
I can't even explain my frustration with Yahoo's rankings. I don't know. It seems like they might have a few openings for fantasy football experts next year, Kyle.
They should.
Because
yeah, you
maybe
actually,
we should apply.
You actually won't be listening to Riding the Pine next season because TJ and I will be working for Yahoo. Okay, writing weekly fantasy football articles and doing a weekly fantasy football podcast because it's miserable. And I take my A-plus that I got in the draft one day earlier, I take it with a grain of salt. I don't even like it.
As do I, and I didn't delete the photo on our Riding the Pine Facebook page because why would I do that?
Now I am, because you went from one A-plus in our second Riding the Pine Fantasy League to me getting an A-plus in our guru league, to me getting a D in the other league. So it's been a roller coaster for my emotions.
It really has, and it feels like I've drafted the same team three times.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So now TJ and I are on vendettas to kind of prove that these Yahoo grades are going to be wrong. I'm angry. I am mad that they predicted me to go 2-12.
I understand. And I know you know how angry I was with my expletive-laced rant I went on by a text message to you.
It was, TJ's not thrilled with Yahoo right about now.
I think it's the worst company in the world.
Yeah, everybody use Google today. If you're bored, just give Google a few more page clicks.
Use
okay?
Bing. I don't care.
Yeah,
anything's better than Yahoo.
Yeah, go see if Dogpile still works.
Next year's draft, we're doing in CBS Sports.
Yeah, you know,
or, you know what? Let's start up our own loser fantasy draft site.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll make our own website with zero servers, so if three people log on, it crashes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it's going
to
work.
Well, it'll have to be a LAN network. We'll just hook up a bunch of computers to it.
Yeah.
You'll have to come to us to draft.
You have to be there. You're going to have to be there.
There. It eliminates the auto
pick
right there.
But how about this? We promise you a solid connection. So that's what we can do.
Mm-hmm. At whatever the connection of the nearest local Starbucks or Big B Coffee.
Yeah.
That's what it'll be. Those are reliable.
Yeah. They've never failed. So there's plenty of stories, and we could go on and on, TJ. We're not going to, about different fantasy football stories we had this past week. As, like you said, you and I drafted in the three same leagues this week. There's always those surprises, but hey, there's no need to get on that horse. There's no need to, you know, there's no need to beat people down right now until they see their own results about week three and they realize, oh, this was a mistake.
Yeah, lots of people take three quarterbacks, Kyle.
Yeah, that happens a lot. Also looking at you there, I think your name was Adam, host of the biggest Bills fan squad in America, apparently.
Oh my gosh.
I say this with a straight face. I did not know that Robert Woods was a person, let alone a wide receiver on a national football team.
I remember him from USC, but I was unaware he was in the NFL now.
Yeah, well, he's apparently on the Buffalo Bills, and apparently Adam's high on him.
But then
year.
Again, the Buffalo Bills are the most irrelevant franchise in NFL
that's
history.
That's true. Whenever they say, nah, we'll just play a couple of your home games in Canada, you know, that's really a telltale sign that you're on the downslope.
Yeah, it
is. Really on the face of irrelevance there.
They might be more relevant in Toronto, though.
Also, you know, taking the Buffalo D that early was not a terrible move at all. I'm sure Buffalo's D is right on the uptick.
I'm sure Buffalo's D won't be on the waiver wire for the entire season
no.
in every single league in America.
I mean, you got me because that was my next pick in the seventh round or wherever you took them. But that's okay. Like we
but
said,
that's neither here nor there.
No, neither
Great
here
pick.
Nor
Great
there.
Great draft.
Great draft. Thanks for joining. Seriously, though, thanks. It's kind of cool to see everybody there. Well, most everybody who showed up. Fantasy football drafting. Even the Nader Top made two appearances, which I was stunned. I thought for sure he'd be on auto pick. He made his appearance, his typical miserable appearance.
Oh, yeah, and our listeners definitely enabled him to be a contender in this first league.
Was it? See, I disagree. I looked at his team in this first league that we drafted last, actually, and I thought miserable. I thought it was terrible.
Yeah, but you look at the other teams in the league, and where's the competition?
By default.
Where is it?
Listen, it's like the NBA playoffs. He will be like the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference, but that doesn't mean he deserves it.
Right. No, exactly.
When he goes 6-7 this year and makes the playoffs, I don't want to hear any trumpeting from Nader Tot that he's a really good fantasy football player because
we all know
it's a lie. The guy can't even figure out how to leave a proper voicemail. Okay.
Oh, which, by the way, I think he did leave one.
Oh, okay. So. Yeah. I'll pull this one up while we wait and we'll get to that later on in the show. I'm sure it's just as solid as an effort as always.
Like we said, though, last week was the greatest voicemail he's ever left. The most production we've ever gotten out of Nader Tot.
Like we said, by far the best content and most he's ever offered this show in terms of providing anything.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually heard Nader Tot for that.
We actually heard his voice, and his point was very hardly driven in, very firm, left no room for explanation or
there was no need to follow up with that. Nader, he hit it. Listen, like we said, I don't see anything.
Oh.
I think he's lying.
Yep, he lied.
Like we said, we talked about this when we talked about internet trolling, TJ. There's two ways to do it. Okay? You can go long, you can really break a person down, or you can JFK him.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, TJ and I were JFK'd a couple weeks ago.
Oh yeah.
When our podcast was mentioned on the Free Beer and Hot Wing show. And it was not a positive manner.
No. I thought it was going to go in a positive direction, but...
So we know the effects that a JFK will have on you.
It started out where it was briefly mentioned, and I knew it was going to go this way, but I was like, oh, yeah, this is nice. I'll just be along for the parade. Let's enjoy the floats, maybe get some free candy.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, boom, from the grassy knoll.
There it is.
You there are Kyle and I's dead bodies.
Unbelievable. Just a real hammer to the back of the head with no chance for getting up.
Not
jeez,
at all.
Just, so we know the damage that a real JFK can have on you, TJ. Mm-hmm. And Nader Todd delivered one of those in punch in the face last week. Or his, that was a punch in the face, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's hard to remember.
It is hard to remember because I think
I don't know if he punched anyone in the face per se.
He left punch in the face, but he still hasn't helped us out with kickers and defenses in terms of fantasy football. Because that's what everybody's really clamoring for.
Everybody
wants the Nader Tots advice on kickers and defenses this year, because then maybe Adam wouldn't have picked Buffalo that early.
If our RTP leagues are any indication, people need to know about their kickers and defenses.
Maybe that's the problem. Maybe the problem is that people have only been listening to Nader Tots portion when we've done fantasy football advice over the past year, and then they turn us off.
You think we need to dumb it down? Maybe we should dumb it down.
We'll dumb it down today. That's all we'll do. You should pick this player, Matt Ryan, good. That's real Nader Todd advice.
It really is.
All right, hang on. I'll give you my weekly Nader Todd advice. I think Green Bay is going to be good this year. Aaron Rodgers. Hang on. This doesn't even feel right. Give me a second. Okay. I really think Calvin Johnson's in for an okay campaign. I've watched him play, and AJ Green. You should really look into Julio Jones this year. Maybe with Calvin Johnson.
I figure if you compare those three with, I'm thinking Adrian Peterson. He's pretty good. Lots of yards.
Yeah. Also, I've been looking, and it turns out Dez Bryant has three good weeks, followed by a down week, followed by a really good week. So if you catch him on that fifth week of really good, that's a good pick. It's a pattern.
I didn't know where you were going there, and then I remembered the pattern.
The pattern. The Kyle Rudolph pattern. Duh. That was so tried and true. Listen, just like the law of gravity, Nader Todd had figured out the Kyle Rudolph pattern last season. He was on to something. I really think he has one good week and then a bad week. So if you pick him up this week, he should be on good week.
If there's one thing you guys need to take away from this, it's that fantasy football is mathematical.
Yeah.
Players try for 2 weeks. They take a week off.
Exactly.
They try for another week. They take 2 more weeks off, and then they're good for 3 more.
It's always a pattern. Mm-hmm. There's never been a fantasy football statistic that is not part of a larger pattern. Okay, there's never an aberration. There's never just steady and consistent. No. Nader Todd got it. We're all stupid. We're all more dumb for not listening to him.
Listen, Matt Flynn will never throw for 500 yards and five touchdowns.
And then get a 5-year, $30 million deal out of it.
Yeah, and if he does, he's going to be a starter on another team, definitely.
Why wouldn't he be? Oh, man, I miss Nader Todd.
Well,
still fun.
It kind of feels like he's here.
It's still, oh, yeah. Oh, hey, Nate. Oh, you're still over there checking hockey scores? Good talk. Thanks for coming.
He's already looking at his hockey rankings for this next upcoming season.
Oh, hey, Nate, you're here, but you're 45 minutes late, and now you're staring at your phone unprepared. Okay, good talk. See you later. Don't worry, TJ. Oh, you didn't bring any links today? Oh, okay, good. Oh, you forgot your computer and you don't have a camera to record your total team effort? That's okay.
Here, let me audibly punch you in the face.
Yeah. Oh, you did not write out or plan your punch in the face. You just want me to roll the music and you'll play it by ear. No, that's a good idea. That's good content. Thanks.
I'm sure there will be no stuttering or stammering at all.
No. I'm sure it's going to be fluid and just like you practiced and rehearsed. Unbelievable.
No, those are definitely Jim Rome pregnant pauses.
What is up?
Phenomenal.
Jim Rome here. Welcome to the jungle. Listen up, clones. Bring it today. Have a take on the phones. 1-866-HaveATake.com. Drop a line
Kyle,
there.
Kyle, that beat-up session was great. It was unbelievable. Listen, it was great. Really great stuff.
If you're going to call in the hotline today, make sure you have a take, okay? Listeners, use my Twitter, at Jim Rome. Read the best tweets on air. Put you in the drawing. Get you a cable box.
Got to come strong, though. If you come weak, I'll call you out on it.
Vic.
We'll run you out.
Vic and NoCal, what is up? Welcome to the jungle.
Hey, Romy.
I don't want to let anybody else talk, so what I'm going to do now is talk to my producer, Kyle Brandt, and he does not have a microphone. Kyle, did you say you got that guest? Okay. When? Do you want to go out later? How's the wife? KB, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We'll take a break. Be back. That's my Jim Rome impression.
Rack him, Alvy.
Alvy, where are you on those sound effects? Play it. Give me a quad yeah, Alvy. Quad yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Alvy. How do people listen to that trash?
I don't know.
Unbelievable.
I don't know.
Moving on. Well, TJ, I think you and I could agree that Twitter's good for a few things. One, news and updates, but more importantly, it's good for fights.
Oh, yeah.
It is the number one avenue for fights.
There really is nothing better than a good Twitter war.
No, and I enjoy it. I especially, maybe it's just my sick, twisted pleasure, but I really enjoy watching a media beef go down.
Oh, definitely.
Now,
because that's
be,
more public than anything.
Absolutely. It used to be, there's a guy by the name of Richard Deitch from Sports Illustrated, works for them, handles media, and anytime ESPN would do anything, Richard Deitch would be all over it. And then the next thing you know, one, like a managing editor from ESPN would chime in, and they'd fight for a couple of minutes, and beautiful stuff. Beautiful stuff to watch. Well, in this case, though, this is the case of local beat writer and national writer, and they had it out on Twitter. They absolutely had it out. And what other team in the NFL would this revolve around, TJ, than our beloved New York Jets?
They're really.
They attract.
There's no other.
They attract misery, sadness, and just real shame and anger. That's what they should put on the banner.
They're not boring, though. The Jets. We're not boring.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The Jets need two banners. You know when they're running out of the tunnel and, you know, some teams have traditions where they'll slap a banner or whatever?
Yep.
The first one, the Jets. Shame, misery, sadness, and anger. And then the next one they'll hit, the Jets. We're not boring. Players will slap both. Those are like
the
mottos.
Question, we're not boring?
Yeah. It's not like, you know, Western Michigan coach P.J. Fleck would row the boat.
Mm-hmm.
It's not chop wood. Which, who was that, Greg Schiano?
Oh, yeah.
No, it's that's the team motto is, we're not boring. Okay? And that dates back to Bart.
No, that's good. On the very end, we're not boring. Okay?
That dates back to Bart Scott bringing his post-game interview of Can't Wait. I mean, this team has been a sideshow for years.
And then the third banner will be just a picture of a foot, and Rex Ryan will slap that one. Or try and masturbate on it. I don't
yeah,
know.
Well, the Rex Ryan will try to slap it. His poor little legs will be jumping. By week three, he'll have a chair. So he'll just walk by, stand on the chair, touch it, and then stroke it a few extra times to make it weird, and then run onto the field.
He doesn't slap it. He actually slows down, stops, and pets it.
It's embossed. It's raised. It's not just paint. Whatever, Rex.
Hey, man.
But
no judging
say,
zone.
Like I mentioned, they're a sideshow, and this is apparently stretched to their writers now. Okay, so there's a story. Now, the New York media, obviously notoriously harsh, TJ, but in this regard, I would argue that that is fair. I would argue it's very fair because the Jets are miserable. You don't hear this bad press from the New York media about the Giants. Because they do it the right way. For the most part, outside of one of their wide receivers shooting himself in the leg, they do things properly, and they stay out of the news, or they at least try to.
Well, that and their coaching staffs and managerial staffs and ownership are not abominations.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
they're not trading for a third-string quarterback to have to get media exposure.
Yeah, and they're not handing out media cards to...
Yeah,
to their players to
exactly.
Here's how you talk to the media
yeah.
to avoid an awkward situation.
The Giants are worried about it on the field. The Jets are more worried about it off the field.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the different schools of thought. Well, there's a guy who writes for the New York Post, which to its discredit, is notorious for being kind of a rag. It's a gossip mag. They're known for their Page Six, where it's essentially just celebrity gossip on it. Mm-hmm. It's not a highly regarded tabloid, I guess you will. But to be fair,
that describes nearly every newspaper in America.
That is very valid nowadays. That's the way the newspaper industry is. So what happened was a national writer named Jason Lacanfora, who writes for CBSSports.com, wrote a article, and his byline for it was Jets have a media problem and a QB problem, seemingly saying, well, they're obviously their QB situation is bad, but the media is making it worse, and the media is making the team worse than what it actually is.
Which I don't think they are. I think this team is going to be 2-14.
We saw them play in the preseason, and it was already hopeless. It's already gone.
Remember at the start of the offseason when Mark Sanchez was very maligned and he was the devil to this franchise. That's my phone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, geez.
All right. nothing to see here. Where was I? He was basically cancer to this franchise.
Yes.
And now that Geno Smith hasn't worked out, and I don't even know who their third string quarterback. Well,
should be McElroy.
They don't have Tebow anymore. They have McElroy, but he's not really ready. And now Mark Sanchez is all of a sudden supposed to be the savior again.
He's back. He's back on board. Everyone's back on board of the Sanchez. So Bart Hubick from the New York Post, he says, sounds like somebody's sucking up to the new GM. Now, a lot of times these guys, they don't anticipate to get responded to. And it's Twitter. There's too many things being tweeted to this guy for him to respond to everything. Mm-hmm. So I'd say he probably had a good argument that it wouldn't be responded to. Well, Jason Lacanfora did get a hold of it, and he was, needless to say, not happy, and he starts accusing the local guy of writing about the Jets with a slant and an agenda, and says he works at a ridiculous tabloid, which we said is true, and the local guy did not take it. Now, this is where I think the local guy threw the hammer down.
Oh.
This was a knockdown in round three, as far as I'm concerned. The only thing that's ridiculous is you coming by for 20 minutes a year and proclaiming yourself a Jets expert. Now, that, in my opinion, could not be more true. These guys love talking about their training camp tours where they visit 30 teams in 16 days, and they talk about,
we're going to make a stop at every NFL training camp and let you know how it's going and break it down.
Yeah, so they can't.
Roster moves and depth charts.
Yeah. Okay, you walked in for an hour, talked to the head coach, and left. What do you think the head coach said? Yeah, we're not going to be very good this year. I don't think Rex Ryan went up and said that to the media. He probably pulled out his media bridge card and started spouting off things. And then this is how I'll answer that. Well, another point is.
And another thing. Let me answer that by saying this.
Just unreal. And needless to say, Lacanfora did not enjoy that. Keep this up. It suits you. Maybe one day, Papa Murdoch, referencing Rupert Murdoch, who I believe owns the Post, will let you graduate to the back page. Then you'll really make it. Just real mudslinging between media guys.
Yeah, because I'm sure Rupert Murdoch makes all the hiring decisions
at
the New York Post.
Absolutely. Rupert Murdoch directly involved with the New York Post.
He only owns like 20% of the world's media. I'm sure he's very involved in the day-to-day operations of a tabloid newspaper.
Absolutely. Now, this is where I really do think the local guy finishes this one off here, because I do think this is true, because this makes more sense than anything that the Jason Lacanfora is referencing, because this is the way the NFL beat writing works. And you see this with Jay Glazer on a national level, who has all of these crazy inside sources. There's nobody better in the NFL in terms of inside scoop and early scoop than Jay Glazer. And I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but so the local guy says, I seem to have touched a nerve by outing your suck up to the GM and bash local guy shtick. Now, what he's insinuating, and he says earlier, is that they do this so they can gain a source. They gain a source, which is now the GM of the Jets, by, you bash the local media. The GM says, yeah, you got them good. Thanks for doing that. And then start, there's a line of communication there that can feed them.
Next time something juicy happens, you'll be the first one I call or something
like
that.
Yeah. Beautiful. Love it. Nothing better than a good Twitter beef. Nothing better. And then the Bart Hubbuck finishes it off by saying, final word, nothing worse in my business than a national writer who tries to get in good with the team by bashing the local writers. I could see how that would be maddening.
Oh, yeah.
And I could see how the national writers probably think there's a bit of a tier caste system, if you will, where they think they're superior.
Oh, yeah. I don't blame this guy at all for this because, he's with the Jets every day, like he says.
Yeah.
This guy comes in for maybe a day and then writes this big, long article pretending like he knows everything that's going on, basically. I mean, he might have gotten some information from the GMs and the coaches and stuff, but he doesn't know the player personalities, the coaching patterns or coaching personalities, anything like that, any of the organizational inside info, I suppose.
This guy gets the look at this sideshow circus every day.
Yeah.
Every day for 8 months. 9 months. I mean, however long. It's a long time he gets to see this real sideshow attraction. And whereas the national guy here, Lacking Four, probably reads about most of what's going on in Jets camp via Twitter. Honestly. I mean, like you said, he's there for maybe one day a year. He might go to a game covering it for his CBS Sports, but he's not there every day. He does not see the train wreck that even you and I can see. I don't understand how you can blame the Jets QB situation in any fashion on the media.
No, and I'm sure this local guy, he's talking with the players every day.
Yeah.
And whether they've come out on the record and said it or not, there is a QB problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a media problem. The players don't believe in the quarterbacks there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't believe that Mark Sanchez or Geno Smith is going to get the job done.
Yeah.
And whether or not they've actually come out on the record and said it to this guy is insignificant, really, because this guy knows how they feel.
Absolutely.
And he knows that it's not the way that the media is covering it that's the problem.
There's more of a chance that a player has come on off the record to this reporter, multiple players, saying what you just said, that they do not believe in the quarterback situation, they don't believe they have a roster built to win football games and make a championship run. I would say that is far more likely than any type of GM telling the truth to Jason Lacanfora in a one-hour meeting. I highly doubt it. Find it nearly impossible, actually.
I'm sure it's distracting, but what do you want the media to do, not do their job?
Yeah. Sticking with the media, you know, TJ, I really think it sounds like a pleasant job, but this is a long haul to be a baseball beat writer. It does seem easy. You're on the road with them for most of the year.
Working almost every day.
Almost every day. Late deadlines because of late game. I mean, this is not a cakewalk. And the Cincinnati Reds, obviously a pretty good baseball team. And what they had was a reporter. Now, when I first saw this tweet, TJ, and I pointed it out to you, it seems pretty innocuous. He's not bashing this player at all. He points out two numbers. That's it.
Yeah, and it's not something you would even
know
unless you're like big stats Reds fan.
Yeah, and these beat writers, they will, you know, they'll talk about lineup changes. They'll post it on Twitter. They'll say, you know, so-and-so's moving to this slot in the lineup and whatever. Well, this guy, this C. Trent, for the Cincinnati Reds, writing for the Cincinnati Inquirer, Reds go from a hitter with a .320 on-base percentage in the two-hole to one with a .310 on-base percentage.
Okay. So a
10-point
difference in OBP.
I mean, it's not huge. I think the bigger point is 320 and 310 for OBP
are very low.
It's not great.
No.
They're pretty mediocre, and obviously you want your two-hitter to be on base for your 3, 4, 5 horses to knock you in. That's the idea.
Yes.
So I don't think this is a slight on anybody in particular, other than saying, well, the two-hole in this lineup hasn't been very good.
Seems like just a statement.
Yeah. Well, who didn't take that as a statement is the guy who moved to second in the batting order, Brandon Phillips.
Yeah, Brandon Phillips detected some sass here.
Now, if I remember right, Brandon Phillips has a history of being kind of a wacko.
Yeah.
I believe he's had some altercations in the past and is kind of a head case
in general.
So he apparently decided to air this grievance when the media was having their post-game brouhaha with the manager, as they do every game in the manager's office, Dusty Baker. So they're just asking him a question. Well, that is until Brandon Phillips bursts in. And thankfully, it was all gathered on tape. That's what makes it better.
Hey, Dusty, the fat on the end.
So already the video picks up with Baker just sitting. Clearly he was in the middle of a conference until someone opened the door, and that someone was Brandon Phillips.
Hey, Dusty, the fat on the end, he worries about my own base percentage. Why don't you tell him? Have me bat eight, though you worry about my own base percentage.
I don't care
fat
about
that. Make him happy, Dusty. Fat mother.
I'm telling you, talking that negative shit on the team, dog. I find out your Twitter name now, mother. It's a wrap.
Okay, so this is where it gets ridiculous because, one, Phillips just wants to call the guy fat.
Yeah.
And two, he does not want the guy to talk at all because the guy is about to say, I don't care about your on-base percentage, which is what we were saying. He doesn't care about you, Brandon Phillips, you whiny little schoolgirl baby. He mentioned the poor hitting and getting on base for the number two hitter in your lineup.
Yeah.
And all you want to do is be the stereotypical idiotic athlete and call people fat and dumb and say they don't know the game.
Mm-hmm.
That's embarrassing.
It really is. And he's off camera, so you can't see him. But Dusty Baker's on camera, and he's just grinning ear to ear.
I know, and that's why I wanted to play this video, because this whole thing happening now, I don't know what to interpret from this. But if one of my players was doing this, I don't think I would allow it. And I can honestly say, from being a Tigers fan for as long as I can remember, I do not think Jim Leland would allow this to happen with any of his players and the media.
No.
I don't think so. I've never heard of a player cursing out a reporter on the Detroit Tigers or 28 other baseball teams, except for the Cincinnati Reds, without being referenced, reprimanded, or anything. And as a postscript to this, the Cincinnati Reds have not issued anything. The Cincinnati Inquirer had to release a statement saying, yeah, it happened, but we're not going to change the way we talk about things and ask questions because we cover this every day, mm-hmm. which is the proper way to handle it. So let's continue playing this, and you can hear the guy try to get a word in edgewise, but Brandon Phillips just wants to continue being dumb.
Team, dog. I find out your Twitter name now, it's a wrap.
Wow. Took you how many years?
Now, that's a good one, because for some reason, Brandon Phillips thinks he now has one up on this beat writer because he, quote, found your Twitter handle.
And that's a wrap.
I don't know if his Twitter handle was hidden.
No.
In the depths. Maybe it was only known to family and friends. Maybe he changes his Twitter handle every other day, kind of like he's, you know, trying to keep the FBI on the move. Doesn't want to get caught.
Uh-huh.
Changes his Twitter handle. But Brandon Phillips, man, that sleuth. Sherlock Holmes Phillips, he found it.
He discovered this man's name.
He's been in the office.
Googled it.
Went for 120 games.
Went to the CincinnatiInquirer.com to the sports pages.
Yeah. Read a few articles because he got distracted.
looked at the thumbnail. Hey, said, hey, that's that fat guy that interviews us all the time. At the bottom of the article, no doubt, it says, follow me on Twitter.
Yes.
Now he's got it, and it's a wrap.
It's a wrap.
He's going to do nothing.
How can you come back from a player knowing your Twitter handle?
I don't know.
Game, set, match.
You just quit right now.
Brandon Phillips just won.
Hopefully there's another team hiring or another newspaper hiring a beat reporter.
Pack your bags. Call your wife. Tell her you're moving. But then the guy tries to come back with, oh, it took you that long?
Which is a great comeback, by the way, because Brandon Phillips goes with the stereotypical fat reporter, media doesn't know the game, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And this guy comes back with dumb athlete.
Yeah, which is just as equal a stereotype, and I would say one is more accurate than the other.
Oh, yeah.
It's a wrap.
Wow, took you how many years? Congratulations.
I ain't in that, man. That's between you and him.
He just seems
Dusty Baker shrinks.
Just seems like the old guy who barely wants to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know why he's doing that anymore. He just wants to go home.
He just wants free good and plenties.
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing I got in my contract is I want free good and plenties and only the red Mike and Ikes on every home and road game in my hotel room.
That's it. I don't ask for much.
I like to think of myself as low maintenance. Well, sticking with baseball, there was a story in the news this past week because it got some national attention, TJ. Minor league baseball promotions usually are among the worst things of all time.
Or the best.
Or the best.
If you're a right-thinking individual.
Absolutely. The minor league baseball, you know, it's known for its in-game antics. It's, you know, kids ring tossing or throwing water balloons into somebody wearing a bin on their heads to get points so they can win a coupon for soup at the local grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's it.
That's all worth it.
It's all worth it. You just got a 98-cent can of tomato soup.
And you got to humiliate yourself in front of thousands of people.
Absolutely.
That's a good trade-off.
It'll be known forever. You are now, you're better off
I'm
for
sure
it.
You will never end up on YouTube.
No, never. Never. Well, this promotion, this team gained national attention this past week, TJ, for their promotion regarding giving away a funeral. An all-expenses-paid funeral, casket, headstone, all that stuff included,
oh, yeah.
Which is probably the most expensive prize they've actually ever given away.
Oh, yeah.
At a minor league baseball
game. There's no doubt
game.
About that.
Well, this is the AAA Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs.
Oh, thank you for that ad, Blue Moon.
Oh, boy, thanks. Yeah, we really appreciate that. So they decided, now these happen all the time, because they're, one, insanely cheap to make, and
yes.
Two, kids can be hellraisers with them, and everybody can hate them more than they do. Foam fingers.
There's no one in America that dislikes a foam finger.
I like a foam finger until I leave a ballpark with it and say, what do I do with this now?
You put it on your wall.
There you go.
I don't know.
If you're 11, you put that foam finger on your wall as a...
Or if you're 23. I don't know.
Hypothetically, you would do that,
not
right?
Not saying I have a foam finger on my wall.
It's just, I don't know. If you want to tell everyone you think they're number one, just put your finger up. I don't understand it. I think it's terrible.
No, they're the best.
It's an awful giveaway.
F off, Kyle. They're the best.
But like it's as equally cool as the hot dog hat you see they give away now.
I can't believe you're denying the greatness of the foam finger.
I just don't see the purpose. Man, call me.
They're
call
like
me.
Rally. Do you like rally towels?
They're rally caps because that actually works. But foam fingers don't work.
Is that
work.
Like your pattern thing? Is that your NATO top pattern thing?
No.
The rally caps, they work?
Listen, unless they start turning foam fingers inside out and wearing them during the eighth and ninth inning of a comeback, I don't think a foam finger has any use even at a baseball game, let alone bringing it home.
I disagree. I feel like there's so many options. You could, you could do some kind of black magic voodoo if you cut off the finger while the other team's up to bat or something, throw it on the field maybe.
I place the foam finger in an equally terrible giveaway category as thunder sticks.
Thunder sticks are bad. I'll give you that. Thunder sticks
are
the worst.
Yes.
but maybe that's only from my experience with baseball, having to pick a billion of those things up game.
That seems miserable. Well, needless to say, the AAA Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs gave away foam fingers. Now, the only problem was, and it's not even a problem. I think it's awesome.
No, this is entirely on purpose.
Because it was Prostate Cancer Awareness Night. And for the uninitiated, there's only one true way to test your prostate for cancer. And it involves a finger.
And typically an anus.
Typically an area you don't usually want a finger.
Especially not one this large.
So they gave the first 3,500 fans a sky blue foam finger. Now, this is where it's funny right here. Because you had to be 18 and older to get this particular foam finger.
That's ridiculous.
So obviously, like you said, they didn't know what they were doing there, making it 18. Because you don't want a 10-year-old carrying around a big finger that's talking about putting a finger up a butt.
Okay, so this night at the ballpark was also known as Pedophile and Rapist Month. Rapist Night.
Yeah, they just had a sting of cops inside waiting to spot old guys trying to give these foam fingers to kids.
Everyone who accepted a foam finger was immediately arrested.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody. Yeah.
That's how you weed them out, Kyle.
Yeah, we're going to need the overflow vans. We're going to have upwards of 2,000 to bring in tonight. Yeah, that's all pedophiles.
Sure does seem like there's a lot of vans without windows in the parking lot tonight.
Yeah, we're gonna have to go into the overflow parking as well. Too many white paneled vans taking up extra parking spaces. Can't even see inside, and we're gonna need 3,000 warrants.
That's easy, right?
Yeah. Call up a judge, have him get signing. Get signed. So, yeah, so the Lehigh Valley prison was overflowed this past week when all the creepy old men who were giving away their foam fingers to young children mm-hmm. were locked away. Like That's what we take away from this story.
I like how they're blue, too, so you can figure, so you can pretend a Smurf is checking your prostate for cancer.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But this is the one foam finger giveaway I'm on board with, because this is self-aware humor. I love that.
Oh, yeah. Do you think anyone actually went home, though, and actually tried it out?
Oh, God. The sad part is, how many went home, tried it out, and actually worked?
Oh, no. All right. So that's that.
Soak in that one for a while you think.
I don't know how to segue to the next story, but does it have...
Hey, guys, football's here. Right? Football. Well, waka waka.
Yeah. Our team's number one.
Well, we found this story, and we had to mention it because it's TJ and I's alma mater. And they play in Division II. I don't know if it's – what is it, FBS? Or is it just Division II?
Division II. Okay. NCAA Division II.
Never understand what they call things now. FBS is Division I-A, right?
I don't know what – I really don't even know what that
FCS
is.
FCS and then FBS and then Division II, because that's logical.
Wait. No, Division I is FBS.
And then Division II is
FCS.
Okay. God, am I stupid.
Get it together.
That's one letter difference. How do I not know the proper naming for the different divisions of college football?
I don't know. Get it together.
But our Division II alma mater, Grand Valley State University, located right here in near our home base, they had what is being described as already the weirdest injury of the season. Now, I wouldn't call this weird as much as I would call it dumb.
It's pretty dumb, but
and probably overplayed. There's one detail in here, TJ, that you and I looked at that we kind of scratched our head and wondered how it happened.
Mm-hmm.
How it happened. Okay. So needless to say, this campus, it's a rural town, and it's a campus. It's not huge. It's not like if you go to the University of Michigan or if you go to any of the large universities with 40,000 students and the campus stretches, you know, 3 square miles.
No, but it's probably 15, 20 walk from end to end.
Yeah, it's a good sized university for a small town. And it really does. It's very well done. It's a beautiful place. But it gets a little bit busy. Because considering they are getting a little big for their britches, there's 20-some thousand students there, and it is
and
fairly
two roads
cramped.
That run through campus.
Two, and they're two laners. Okay,
yeah.
That's it. Starting defensive lineman Isaiah Dunning. Now he is now expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks. Now this isn't one of those wacky injuries like you might think, where you sneezed wrong or laid on a pillow wrong or whatever. And, you know, screwed your neck up. Now, this is what happened. Now, the head coach, Matt Mitchell, he told the media, the injury happened around 8 a.m. Now, Dunning was walking to get some breakfast, as you will do, to the local commons hall, the local cafeterias. Get yourself some breakfast.
It's the most important meal of the day, Kyle. Really gets your metabolism going.
Yeah, it sets you up for a positive experience throughout the day. Now, Dunning, he was on the grass, and as he stepped over the curb onto a service road, at the same time, a pickup truck was driving past. Now, this, hearing it like this, it spells disaster.
It does, but the fact that this says service road implies to me exactly where he was on campus.
Yeah.
It's not a very frequented area for cars.
No, not very frequent at all. And what happened was who was actually driving this pickup truck was a redshirt freshman lineman named Zach Jolly. Which makes this story all the better. What is he doing driving a pickup truck, or was it just his truck? I guess it was. I don't know why I assumed he was.
Well, I think if you're an offensive lineman, you're pretty much obligated to drive a pickup truck.
We've all seen Varsity Blues.
Yeah.
You have two requirements as an offensive lineman. One, you need to have a heart attack, and two, you need to drive a pickup truck.
At some point. Not necessarily every day. That's
probably
not good.
No,
but
that's not healthy and safe. But one a year. Get it all out of there. You know, go to the doc, have them clean you out.
Yeah, exactly. Then you're ready to go. You got a whole nother year of cholesterol.
Those are your two requirements to be an offensive lineman. So we can only assume the size of Zach Jolly.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Jolly was driving past in this truck, and he happened to hit Dunning, who had stepped over onto the road. Now, like we said, that has the possibility to be scary.
It does. This is also, I will have you all know, this is a very frequent occurrence on this campus. People get hit by cars all the time. It's pretty ridiculous, actually.
Yeah.
Seems like every year there's at least two or three people that get clipped by a car.
And that is because I, you know, like we said, we went to, we attended this campus, and it is a weird type of love-hate relationship with vehicles and pedestrians.
Mm-hmm.
Pedestrians, which I believe they do in some regard have every semblance of the right-of-way.
Yes.
Cars, a lot of them don't want to buy into that theory.
But still, that does not absolve you from not looking both ways before you
problem.
Cross the street.
That's the problem. Whereas you may have the right-of-way, it is still your obligation on a level of, you know, personal safety.
Yeah,
to take a gander before you just kind of stroll on into the road.
Yeah, you know, Kyle, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but I would wager that 100% of people car incidents end with the car winning.
You know what? I think I've seen The Avengers where...
I knew you were going to go this route.
Where that... Well, we can go ahead and call that the exception to the rule.
Yeah.
So... I'm going to assume that
this
junior defensive lineman was not the Hulk.
It's not a frequent occurrence for someone to be able to stop a train with their fist.
Yeah. So okay.
And I think that's what we're getting at.
So we'll call the Avengers the exception to the rule.
Yes,
here.
But okay, you're right. Not impossible. 99.9%.
The problem, it was a total accident, but the truck was traveling 5 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, check that kid for DUI. No reason to be going 5 ever. I don't even care what the speed limit is. If the speed limit says 5, you do 15 because we're in America.
That's right. That's how you do it.
Especially 5 miles an hour. Yeah, 8 a.m. Oh, okay. I'm sure it's packed. 5 miles an hour. How absolutely embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
But more embarrassing, the guy getting hit by a truck going 5 miles an hour. How do you not see that thing crawling down the road?
And how do you get hurt? He gets hit at faster speeds on the football field.
Absolutely. He probably walks faster. He probably passed the truck on the sidewalk as he was walking.
I guarantee he gets hit with more force than a truck traveling 5 miles per hour on the football field when he comes off the line for a snap against an offensive lineman.
That force of helmet to shoulder and, you know, helmet to chest, hand to chest. Absolutely more power than what he got hit by with his truck. And he got diagnosed with a dislocated right shoulder, neck pain, back spasms, 4 to 6 weeks.
Hmm. What if this is all an elaborate scheme to get a Vicodin prescription and sell it to students on campus?
Now we're talking.
Yes.
Now we're talking.
All right, you heard it here first. Grand Valley State University football team drug ring.
Take note, local media. Take note.
I'm just saying, it's entirely possible.
Ugh. Not a very endearing story to our former university, TJ, on a national scale there.
You heard it here first, local radio shows.
Yeah, when you're scooping that 7 weeks later, you better call us because we're talking about how we figured it out.
And I want you to tell me to my face that I know sports.
Yeah, you are going to admit, you're going to shake my hand and say, wow, good job, you sure do know sports.
Uh-huh. Those exact words.
Those exact words. You write
Golly
it
gee.
Write it down now, because that's what I need you to say. Well, the one story we want to wrap up before we break down, before everybody turns this podcast off, and then we start talking about wide receivers and tight ends for fantasy football, TJ, was just one more shining example of the idiocy and mongrelism that is soccer fanhood.
It's why soccer is the worst, because this kind of stuff happens all the time, this kind of disgusting stuff.
Absolutely.
And like I said to you earlier, even when soccer seems to get it right, they give a kid a make-a-wish day with the Portland Timbers or whatever, Seattle Timbers or whatever. They get it wrong. Because
they somehow do.
Because the kid's a glory hound.
The cancer kid glory hound. Lives in infamy.
They can't even pick the right cancer kid.
Yeah. Way to screw that one up. You picked the biggest cancer kid that was on the make-a-wish list. Unbelievable.
Ugh.
Unbelievable. Well, this is another shining example. The UEFA Champions League, they punished the defending Polish champions. I don't know how the hell to say that. What is that? Legia Warsaw?
Wait, where is that pointed out?
Legia?
Legia, like one letter removed from labia?
I don't think you're probably right.
I don't think it's Lazia. I don't know if Poland.
Well, they're dirty Polacks.
I don't know if they pronounce their E's like the Spaniards do.
Legia Warsaw.
Whatever's the dumbest pronunciation.
Legia. Legia Warsaw.
Legia.
Yeah, Legia Warsaw. They were punished for incidents involving their fans, which I didn't know that happened, but it probably should, because as everybody knows, soccer fans are animals. Now, they got punished for a match with the New Saints last month. They were fined $30,000, and they closed the usual hangout for these lunatic fans. So
they shut down, like, an alley outside the stadium?
Yeah, essentially. And it was also their home.
Dumpsters weren't picked up for the next 2 weeks.
So what happened was the supporters in the next home game, they gathered in a different section of the stadium, and then they did the following. Now, we'll describe what they did before we play, but they dropped a banner over the railing, if you will, between the upper deck and lower deck, and that said, Ultra Extreme Fanatical Atmosphere. Okay, obviously, this is Poland, so that makes sense to them, but to us, that looks and sounds stupid because it is.
Ultra Extreme, though.
Ultra Extreme. Ultra Extreme Fanatical.
Like, ultra extreme intense.
Think we ultra extreme best fanatical ever atmosphere
in the universe.
Yeah,
infinity times infinity.
So then they did this. Now it's going to pick up with your standard soccer noise of a somehow sold out soccer arena in a sure to be 0-0 tie.
Oh, this is Poland. Remember, these people are animals.
Oh yeah. So they're chanting because they're mad, remember, that they got closed off because they're racist. Okay? That is, I don't think we've mentioned that yet, but they're racist, so they got punished, and now they're crying like babies, and they're chanting. Now, that's not just what they're doing. They're chanting, but then the next thing they do, what appears to be about 100 of them, I would say, TJ, at least, they all lit. What appears to be
flares.
Yeah. That's the only correct term. I don't know if they are flares or if they're some Polak offshoot.
Molotov cocktail.
Yeah. Yeah. they got their nearest half empty bottle of booze, stuffed a rag in it.
Their nearest half empty bottle, which was in their hand, conveniently enough.
Yeah, from 30 minutes ago. And they lit them on fire. And now there's about 100 people in the stands waving these crazy flares. It looks like the stands are on fire, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
It really does look scary.
But the fires look very self-contained, which leads me to believe they are flares.
Yeah, definitely flares.
The only thing I'm surprised in this is that they didn't then throw the flares onto the field and burn the stadium down.
Yeah.
Because these people seem like poor decision makers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't decide the best type of way to protest would be to, you know, put urine in a bottle and throw it as far as they could.
And can I just say how ironic it is that the Polish are trying to trumpet their right to be racist at a soccer game?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying what the Nazis did was great, but maybe they had the foresight that this was going to be the issue.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
You know, it's just a little ironic to me.
I will say this.
Got
I will say
here.
That the Polish doing this after what happened to them in the 1930s is ironic. I will not, however, jump on that sinking rowboat over there, TJ.
I'm not saying that it was a good decision. I'm just... maybe they knew something we didn't.
There goes the shock jock meter. That thing has never, ever, ever been higher.
How do you fight racism, Kyle, with more racism?
That is true. If there's ever been one way to defeat racism, that is the way to do it, by the other group being more racist.
Uh-huh.
Now, just as a shining example of what this fan group has done before, they also had a banner when they were against Israel's Tel Aviv team that had something about jihad on it. Just real classy, classy folks there fans of the Polish soccer, I guess. Unbelievable. You look at American sports and they you will get caught if you try to get in with a flare.
Oh, yeah.
you know? But apparently in Poland, the security staff is a couple of weenie dogs and one fat guy eating a sausage while 80,000 people stream past them on the way in.
Then the other exit is manned by 14 kielbasas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just a pack of uncooked kielbasa. Just uncooked. Well, everybody can turn the podcast off now. Apparently that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
At least according to Riding the Pine Fantasy players. Because they definitely have not listened to our advice over the years, TJ.
Very clear.
Now we're going to get going on this. We're going to try to get through these fairly quickly. We're going to do wide receivers and tight ends. We'll start off with wide receivers. Same format that we've done, TJ. Our top five. Why don't we go ahead and start going from bottom up here. My number five receiver this year, and I think I may have him a little higher than a lot of people, Larry Fitzgerald. Now, this guy's a perennial superstar, and he finally has a semblance of a quarterback throwing it to him, and that's the main difference that I put him in the top five. Because what you can now count on is his previous 2 years are the absolute rock bottom of what he will be the rest of his career. And that is because he's had physically a body throwing to him the last 2 years, and he still put up pretty average numbers,
mm-hmm.
which leads me to believe with the quarterback in this system, in Carson Palmer, or you know, anybody who has history throwing the football can actually get it done.
Absolutely. I agree with that. I mean, new coach, too. New offense.
Yeah.
There's a lot to like about. I actually like a lot about the Arizona Cardinals this year. I think that offense will be pretty competitive.
I think the terminology is it can't get worse.
That is
in terms
for
of
certain.
Offensive output. So that's the reason to look up if you have Larry Fitzgerald on your team. Now, my number four, TJ, Julio Jones. I may be a little bit more down on him than a lot of people. I actually have him on one of my teams, and I'm happy I do have him. But he scares me a little bit, considering the other tools in that Atlanta offense. Now, he's way too explosive to ignore, though. In like I said, the situation that scares me with him is he's kind of a 1A and a 1A and, you know, 1B situation with Roddy White there. He's going to put up numbers, but he could be putting up a lot better numbers if Roddy White weren't there or if he were in a different offense and he was the clear-cut number one that he should be.
Yeah, there's a real Nader Top pattern with Julio Jones. He'll have a really huge year or week, 1 week, and then the next week it'll be Roddy White who has that huge week. You know, you just never know week to week which one of the two is going to have a big game. It never seems to be both of them.
Yeah.
So
he very well might prove me wrong. He could end up being the best wide receiver in the game at the end of the year or the number two guy, or he might be, you know, in the second 10 instead of the top five.
At this point, Roddy White, while still having explosive ability, seems to be more of a possession guy. So Julio Jones, of the two wide receivers in that offense, is definitely the one you want.
Yeah, absolutely.
So my number five, actually, I took Vincent Jackson.
Okay.
I think he's going to have a lot of this is attributed to my love for Josh Freeman this year. I think he's going to be great. He's my backup quarterback in all three of my leagues.
You are on board with the Freeman train this year.
He's got some mechanics issues, but
which he has since he was a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Still haven't been ironed out, but you know.
Well, it's another year. I think he'll.
This is the one.
It's another year to work on it. It'll be better.
Okay.
No, but Vincent Jackson had nearly 1,400 yards last year, eight touchdowns. He's the only really wide receiver threat in that offense. Mike Williams is there, but
a good two.
Yeah.
He's a really good two.
He's there, but he's not going to detract from Vincent Jackson's numbers at all. He's a real good big play threat. That's what he's made his entire career on being.
Mm-hmm.
He led the league in yards per catch last year, and I don't see that changing, really, especially with Doug Martin in that backfield taking a lot of the coverage away from
mm-hmm.
Vincent Jackson. I really just like that Tampa Bay offense. I think also that division is going to be so high scoring that they're going to have to throw a ton to keep up in games.
That is one thing they're going to have to do, is they're going to have to win a few shootouts up there.
Oh, yeah. So I really just like the situation with Vincent Jackson and his ability.
Yeah.
My number four, I'm a little higher in, well, one spot higher on Larry Fitzgerald than you. His 71 receptions last year were his lowest since his rookie year. Lowest in a full season since his rookie year.
Yeah, that's what I've been saying. It can't get worse.
And that was with Ryan Lindley, John Skelton, Kevin Cobb throwing to him.
Oof.
If he can put up those kind of reception numbers in that offense, with Carson Palmer, he should be able to get back to where he's been the last, not the last 2 years, but during the Kurt Warner years.
Absolutely. My number three, and this is a guy who I had last year, is Dez Bryant. The thing to remember with him, he had such a breakthrough even after his finger was just mangled late last year. And if the offseason has been as productive as it has sounded, Bryant, he could be the absolute wide receiver beast. The numbers he was putting up in the final five, six games last year were unheard of fantasy numbers. Miles Austin is a distant memory there with an albatross of a contract after one good year. Witten's on the downside. He's getting older. He's still going to be a very high catch guy, Witten is. But they do not have a downfield guy and a guy who can actually possess the ball like Dez Bryant can in that offense. Now, a healthy run game would help. Who knows if DeMarco Murray can slug it out for 16 games. But Roman O'Brien's a huge connection that you can tell that really blossomed last year, and this is going to be a long time to come.
I have Dez Bryant 3 as well. Like you said, literally the only weapon in Dallas.
Yeah.
Outside of Jason Witten, who's a possession guy. He's a guy who's going to move the chains. But Dez Bryant's going to get those looks in the red zone and the deep looks every time. Miles Austin is a pretty nice number two. He's a few years removed from his best days, but he's still formidable there.
Yep.
And I think that running game will be enough to kind of take a little bit of attention away from Dez Bryant.
Yeah.
But like you said, dude's just uncoverable. Even last year with the bad finger, it didn't stop him, and no one could stop him. And last year, he was the only option on that team because that running game last year was just terrible,
and
just decimated.
And this offseason, he hasn't even had an issue off the field. Who knows? Maybe Dez Bryant's finally turned the corner.
Baby steps.
Baby steps. One at a time. One at a time. I have a feeling our number two and one, TJ, are going to be identical here. AJ Green from Cincinnati. He's got great depth behind him. I really like the Bengals offense. I really like the Bengals defense. I'm really high on the Bengals this year. The best young game manager in the NFL in Andy Dalton. That kid has been dynamic. For a kid coming out of college who was known as being not a big arm, you know, not a real athletic guy, but he makes the game, he makes the passing game happen for that offense, and he's very, very good at it. It helps his stock very, very greatly. He's hard to stop. You can't slow him down in a division. And this is one thing to remember about that division. They are really, really old. That is going to be hard to stop A.J. Green's speed when you're talking about a team like the Steelers, a team like the Ravens, who just cannot compete on a speed level right now like Cincinnati and to a lesser degree, Cleveland is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cleveland's not as old as those other teams, but they're also not as talented.
Absolutely. So. I mean, yeah, they do have Joe Hayden there, but that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have A.J. Green there as well. Like you said, deep threat for Dalton. I mean, Dalton doesn't have the biggest arm, but he could still take some shots, and he does.
Yeah.
And he makes efficient use of the shots he takes. Love that offense, too. That running game's going to be a lot better without Ben Jarvis Green Ellis as the undisputed number one and nothing behind him.
You're going to see a little more diversity there.
Giovanni Bernard is a nice rookie running back who can get outside the tackles, take one to the house, also catch the ball a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But what I really like about the Bengals offense is their tight end situation. They took the rookie from Notre Dame, Tyler Eifert. They could, if they wanted to, run a little bit of that New England 2 tight end offense with Jermaine Gresham, who's made the Pro Bowl the last 2 years, and Tyler Eifert, who's a really, really talented pass catcher from the tight end position, really big body. They've got tons of red zone options. That's the one thing I think could hurt A.J. Green, but ultimately his talent is just far and above anything that the Bengals have offensively.
Yep. And now both of our number one here, obviously Calvin Johnson out of the Detroit Lions. He's the greatest wide receiver in our generation. You cannot stop him.
No.
The best you are going to hope for is for him to have a ho-hum 110-yard, one touchdown game. You're really not going to keep him much lower than that on average.
The one thing I think could hurt him is if Stafford really struggles like he did throughout the preseason, but that has been a little concerning for me. But also a full game of Stafford and Johnson, a full season of that would be beneficial to get them clicking on the right page. But also that offense, they're going to throw it a billion times.
Yeah.
So who else is it going to go to?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we both picked a couple of mid-round sleepers and late-round sleepers. Now, mid-round, when we say mid-round, we're probably talking anywhere between 5 or 6 and, you know, 7, 8, 9, things like that, the real mid-rounds. And then late rounds, you're probably my late rounds, I picked guys, we're really talking probably rounds 12, 13, things like that. Mm-hmm. So mid-round sleepers, my two, TJ, I first picked DeSean Jackson. I've been all over the DeSean Jackson wagon this offseason, and mainly because I'm all over that Chip Kelly offense in Philly that he's instituted. It's going to be really, they're going to run a lot of plays. Jeremy Maclin's gone. There's not a lot of other options to throw to unless you want to throw it to the racist Riley Cooper. LeSean McCoy and DeSean Jackson are their key cogs in that offense, and they both fit very, very well into what Chip Kelly wants to do. It should be really, really fun to watch. That's the key to remember. He's average rank. He's been drafted the 23rd receiver. Now, for my money, that's a huge steal, because this guy is upside as a wide receiver 1, borderline 1, a solid, solid 2 on your fantasy roster. Just name another threat on that Philly offense, and they're going to run close to 100 plays a game. And Mike Vick has shown that this is the offense that suits him very, very well this preseason. My other mid-round sleeper, I know TJ does not like him, so you're not going to like this one. Kenny Britt out of Tennessee.
Yeah.
Jake Locker finally looking to have his breakthrough year. And every report I've seen and all the action I've seen is that he finally actually looks like a quarterback.
No, see, that's the thing. I don't mind Kenny Britt. Kenny Britt has talent.
Yeah.
All kinds of talent. Any other team, I love Kenny Britt. I hate Jake Locker. Jake Locker is not a quarterback.
If Britt can stay on the field, he's a great option on a team that should be having a bit of a revival on offense there, with Chris Johnson looking to have a bit more of a bounce back after his few years of whining and complaining about the offensive line. And
Chris Johnson struggled early last year, but got on track last 6 weeks.
He had the most targets on that team during the preseason by a long shot. He's averaged 40th wide receiver taken. Could be a very, very solid number 2 for you if you take a wide receiver in that time frame.
All right, my two mid-round sleepers I have for you. First is Pierre Garçon.
Mm-hmm.
Number 1 receiver in what should be a very explosive Washington Redskin offense.
Yeah.
They've got a running back who I know you hate, but I think he'll be more than enough to take pressure off the outside for him. Alfred Morris.
Off that wagon.
But they've got 3 receivers, and they actually go 4 or 5 wide receivers deep there.
They really spread it out.
They've got a tight end who can catch the ball in Fred Davis.
Yeah.
And work the middle of the field. And then Robert Griffin III. If he stays healthy, he's got a cannon for an arm, and Garçon is his deep threat. Garçon, one of the fastest wide receivers in the league.
Yep.
And catches the ball. Ball gets thrown to him, he'll catch it. So if he bounces back from his foot injury, which really disappointed me last year, as I was counting on him to really have a huge year for me last year,
mm-hmm.
I think this is the year if he can avoid those little nagging injuries.
Now, when did he leave Indy? Was that...
I think last year was his first year in Washington. Year.
Quite an error there by Indy letting him go, I really think so.
Yeah.
He could have been the heir apparent to Reggie Wayne, and what a 1-2 combo that would have been with him and Reggie Wayne.
I agree. My second mid-round sleeper, I actually have 2, and they're kind of similar. One's a little more explosive. I'll give you 2. Sidney Rice and Anquan Boldin.
Mm. All over the Sidney Rice, man. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, number 1 wide receiver in Seattle. I mean, there's not a ton of separation between 1 and even 3 in Seattle, but Rice is the guy. Russell Wilson, good young quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Not somewhat of a game manager, but a game manager that'll take a few more risks than a guy like Dalton or Alex Smith.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Sidney Rice is the guy he would be taking the risks to. He's going to be the deep downfield threat. You have Golden Tate there, but Sidney Rice has already established himself in this league as a guy who can have success in the right offense with the right quarterback.
I don't buy Golden Tate as a wide receiver 1. He's kind of a touchdown hawk, and that's what he does. But that doesn't make him a legit number 1 on that team or in fantasy football.
No, Golden Tate was a guy who would catch you 3 to 4 balls a game last year.
Yeah, on average.
And you'd be banking on him to catch a big one because you really had nothing else.
Yep.
He's not explosive. He doesn't have the ability to make people miss or outrun someone, really. So I think Sidney Rice is the guy. He has all those abilities, and he's a really sure-handed receiver who you should see a ton of targets in the red zone as well. And then Anquan Boldin, right now on this team is the number one wide receiver with the San Francisco 49ers because Michael Crabtree is on the PUP. He's going to miss the first 6 weeks for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Mario Manningham is hurt. So he's the guy. He's not explosive.
No, he's
somewhat of a plodding wide receiver, but yeah. The ball gets thrown to him and he catches it. He had almost 900 yards last year in that Baltimore offense.
Yeah, him
so.
And Vernon Davis. That's about it for in terms
it's
of
bleak,
throwing the football.
It's
there.
Bleak receiving in San Francisco, but Anquan Boldin should, if nothing else, put up good numbers for the first 6 weeks until Crabtree gets back.
Absolutely. Now the late round sleepers. This is a guy that, you know, we talked about Cincinnati. I told you I was really high on Cincinnati. And they have two guys there that could make a serious impact as the second and third wideouts. I went with Mohamed Sanu. The other one I'm obviously referencing, Andrew Hawkins, but he's got kind of a knee thing going on right now. Don't know when exactly he'll be healthy or back. So I went with Mohamed Sanu, and he should take a lot of heat off of A.J. Green. He's a real speed threat down the field. And like I mentioned, that division, speed very, very well may kill against these older teams and defenses. He might just run past the secondary every play. I mean, there's a good chance of it. He could rack up some serious numbers in those games. As like I said, him and A.J. Green are probably the fastest tandem in terms of one and two wide receivers in football. The other guy went with rookie DeAndre Hopkins out of Houston. Andre Johnson cannot do what he has done. He's getting quite a bit older. He was taken in the 2001 draft. I believe is what it was. He's 32, 33, something like that. He's shown signs of breaking down a little bit, getting not as healthy as he has been over his career. And that's not an indictment on Johnson at all. He's been a fantastic wide receiver in that league. He's just getting older in that age, in that stage, where it starts to break down.
He's been the guy in that receiving game for 12 years since he came into the league. He's been the guy. It wears on you.
He's already the second option in that offense. They do have Owen Daniels at tight end, who is a very good tight end. But he's already the second option. I would argue, and this may be a bit of a bold prediction, that there is a chance that he may pass Andre Johnson by the end of the year as the primary targeted receiver for Matt Schaub in that offense. So he just has a few more tools right now, and he's a steal as late as he's being taken, and in some drafts not being taken at all if you're talking a very a thin league.
Mm-hmm. All right, so I really love this Arizona offense. I guess love is a strong word. I just think it'll be
better.
Leaps and bounds better than last year.
And like we said, what's the motto? Can't get any worse.
No. And Andre Roberts is a guy who had success even in that offense last year. 759 yards and 5 touchdowns last year.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty similar to his rookie year there. So he's been in Arizona for two abysmal offenses, and he's put up numbers. And now he has Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald on the outside taking attention away from him in the slot. He's the number three in that offense. They should have some semblance of a running game, even if Mendenhall doesn't stay healthy. It should be leaps and bounds better than it was last year.
Yeah.
I just like Andre. The fact that he put up numbers the last 2 years
with that
quarterback carousel, It sticks out to me, and
with
I think
the
he'll continue.
That is that team.
It's clear he can succeed when situation isn't right.
Yeah.
Which I like.
True.
The other guy I have is Chris Givens from the St. Louis Rams.
Mm.
A lot of people are talking up Tavon Austin as kind of the new number one of that offense, and he very well might be, but he's not a big guy, very slight. Guy who's probably a little more suited for slants out of the slot and go routes. But Chris Givens is a guy who had some pretty good success and pretty good rapport with Sam Bradford last year, and who will be stepping up into a bigger role this year.
Yeah.
I think this year is a good year for Chris Givens to kind of take that next step and up his production with Danny Amendola going to the New England Patriots. There's going to be more balls to go around, and I think he's the main benefactor from that. And he's going, I think, in some drafts later than 100 picks.
Way,
so,
way late. Yeah. You're talking 10th, 11th round, things like that. You're seeing Chris Givens go. And he is the number two there. Their tight end situation, Jared Cook, he's on his uptick as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, rookie wide receivers are hit or miss. I mean, you very well might see Tavon Austin go off as he have a great year, but you also very well might see him have a Justin Blackmon campaign where he's just not very effective.
Yeah, or injured. I mean, he's a small guy.
Yeah, could happen.
Now, we also picked two to avoid here before we get to tight ends quickly. My two to avoid, I know you're not on board with this first one, TJ, Marcus Colston. High-powered offense, but he's way too streaky. That offense spreads the wealth around very efficiently, and that's, again, not a bad thing, but for fantasy purposes, it is. He might have 125 yards and a couple touchdowns 1 week, followed by 12 yards, two catches, and no touchdowns the following week. He's too hard to predict for as high as he is going. Now, if you can get Colston as a steal-type player in a round where he really is clearly probably should have been off the board by now, by all means, take him. But avoid where he's going right now, I guess is what I'm saying in terms of Marcus Colston. The other guy, Greg Jennings, I know we're both on board with this. The Minnesota offense is terrible. He's slower. He's older with a huge contract on a team with a terrible quarterback. The best hope is Bolden-type numbers, and that is really optimistic. Patterson figures to see the downfield throws. Kyle Rudolph, if you ask Nader Tot, he's known for vulture and TDs on a team already revolving around Adrian Peterson. Don't know where Jennings really fits here. Don't really see the numbers being effective numbers for fantasy purposes for taking him.
All right, I thought about going an obvious direction here with Stevie Johnson.
Yeah.
Because that Buffalo quarterback situation is as miserable as Arizona's was last year.
At least until Manuel's back.
Yeah. But the guy I'm going to go with is Torrey Smith.
Oof.
Who's the number one.
Really?
The number one in that Baltimore offense. Being taken very high based on, I guess, potential alone, because he was taken very high last year, too, on that same potential, and it didn't really pan out.
No.
I suppose the thinking is he's the only one there, but I think that detracts from him. He's the only one there. And I don't think that they're going to be playing in a ton of high-scoring games. I think they're going to be keeping the score as close as they can, trying to get that defense off the field and maybe be a little more conservative. The other one I have is a trio of wide receivers, and they're all the Denver Broncos receivers.
Yep.
Because they're all extremely talented.
Yeah.
They're all very high production players, but there's just not enough balls to go around in that offense.
No.
And it's simple as that.
I mean, take a look at that team, and again, don't take this as an indictment on the Denver Broncos position players' talents. They're very good. But man, those three wide receivers plus the tight end game, plus you still have to run the football.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is no way that any of those people are the best option. There is Thomas, simply because he's the only true downfield threat for them. But even still, that is going to be such a shared wealth of footballs there that I have been avoiding in every draft I've done and every mock draft I've done. They are not even on my fantasy radar.
And the problem with them is they're all going so high because everyone thinks this offense is going to be explosive, and it probably will, but for fantasy purposes, they're all going to detract from each other.
Yeah.
And I think Eric Decker might be the one that actually ends up having the best year because he's kind of a Welker-Thomas hybrid.
Yeah.
And Peyton Manning, his arm strength is down, and that's kind of where Demaryius Thomas has made his hay.
Yeah.
So I think Eric Decker might be the best option of those three, but I, like you, have been avoiding all of them.
Yeah. Don't take them unless, again, you're getting a very, very good steal late. Now, tight ends, I think we'll audible on the fly here, TJ. You just want to do top three.
Yeah.
We'll go to top three tight ends. My third, and there is a theme with a lot of my guys, Jason Witten, old but reliable. He's always going to haul in 6 to 9 balls a week, it feels like. Solid touchdown numbers. He's not elite anymore. Well worth a take and a confident weekly plug-in. If you get Jason Witten in a round that he's going in an appropriate manner, plug him in every week, and you're not going to have any issues. You're going to be happy with his output at the tight end position.
Yeah, there's a very strong connection with Tony Romo and Jason Witten. Jason Witten's been there
forever,
ever since Tony Romo came up, and he was Tony Romo's security blanket.
Yeah,
and now he still is Tony Romo's security blanket.
Mm-hmm. My number two, again, Gonzalez. Tony Gonzalez out of Atlanta. He's older but more reliable is what I put down for him. Great offense. Age has not affected him at all. This is a guy who looks like he could honestly play for another 10, 12 years if he really wanted to. He's never been known as a speedster, but he still does it. He still does it. He's in line for 850, 8 touchdowns. And this is at a really weak position, that is tight end this season. He's a great steal going as late as he is. That's why I went against my draft strategy in the Guru Draft League this past week, because I saw him at a round that I didn't think he should still be on the board, and I had to go about three rounds before I usually go tight end to get this guy, but I was still very happy in getting him. My top tight end, obviously, this is going to be no surprise, Jimmy Graham. Tight end machine, or touchdown machine there. Speed, very good hands, red zone instincts. He's far and away the best tight end available. He's going in the second round. If you see fit to take him there, if you have one of those mid-level picks where you're not going to get a top-tier running back and you don't feel comfortable taking a wide out right there, you can go tight end in the mid to late second. Feel very okay with taking Jimmy Graham. He's going to put up monster numbers.
Mm-hmm. I have one that's different from you. My third is Tony Gonzalez for all the reasons you mentioned. Yardage guy, but more importantly, a guy who's going to get probably the majority of the red zone looks in the end zone.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, this really is a guy who can go up and get the ball anywhere on the field.
He's still tall, and he still dunks it over that goalpost, mm-hmm. and he's 38 years old or 40 years old.
And that offense in that division, that offense already high-powered. In that division especially, they're going to have to throw a ton.
Shootouts.
He's going to be seeing tons of looks.
Yep.
Opportunity alone, he's number three. Then I have Jimmy Graham second, actually.
Wow.
And he's going to put up huge numbers. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And that Sean Payton will be back in that offense, and Drew Brees mm-hmm. goes to him frequently.
Yep.
But then I have Rob Gronkowski taking the top
spot. Come
on. I know he's going to miss a couple weeks.
Absolutely. At least a couple weeks.
And I think it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I think he still ends up as the number one tight end in the NFL for fantasy purposes. 38 touchdowns in the league since he came in. Mm-hmm. Most in the league. Most touchdowns in the league since he's come in. There's no other true options in that Patriots offense when he comes back. What Aaron Hernandez isn't on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Sudfeld should be a more than acceptable replacement for Hernandez on the other side of that. So it shouldn't detract too much from the coverage Rob Gronkowski sees. But Danny Amendola will be there working the middle and working the outsides, hopefully, if he stays healthy.
For two games.
And I like Kenbrell Tompkins, too.
Okay.
So I don't think that offense is as terrible as it kind of looks right now.
Yeah.
But it does look kind of bleak, but I'm excited to see how it all ends up working out, because I think that's one of the more interesting stories of the NFL season this year, is the Patriots might not be as dominant as they have been in years past.
Yeah, Gronkowski, when healthy, obviously a great player, has not proven to be healthy the last year. And I don't buy Sudfeld being able to just kind of slide into the Aaron Hernandez role. Otherwise, you'd see every team running these type of two tight end systems right now. I don't know if Gronkowski gets the separation when he comes back that he was used to. I don't know if he gets as little attention as he did, because there were more options on that New England offense that defenses had to pay attention to in Hernandez and in, you know, even a Brandon Lloyd who had a little bit of speed when he was with them. I don't know that he's going to receive less attention, and more attention's never a good thing for a guy like him who really could use a man coverage thing down the field to grab those touchdowns.
But he's a big body. He's going to be bigger than most linebackers mm-hmm. who are going to be covering him. I can't imagine he's going to see corners or safeties covering him.
Yeah. Buyer beware. That's all I say on Rob Gronkowski. I will say this for me. I did not have him in my top five.
I will say this. Lots of people know he's injured, and he's sliding in drafts.
Yeah.
He's still getting taken
in the sixth, seventh round.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I don't buy that he'll be totally healthy. As weird as this surgery thing has gone, and now the back thing really, really puts a scare into me in terms of Gronkowski, because you don't just get up and go from back injuries. You know, this kind of reminds me of the Peyton Manning thing, where it started off, well, he might miss week one. Well, he might get put on PUP. Well, he might be back for whatever. Ended up being they just shut him down. He didn't even attempt to come back, and back injuries tend to linger. Back injuries are scary. You don't come back fully where you were. And like I said, I didn't have him in my top five. I see he is going, and precedent says you should take him because his numbers speak for themselves.
I think he's worth a flyer because if it works out, you've got one of the best tight ends in the league. If it doesn't, worst case scenario, you have to get one off of waivers, in which I think tight end's pretty deep. I mean, like I mentioned, Jermaine Gresham, Pro Bowl last 2 years, isn't getting taken in most drafts.
Yeah, he's
so there you
not
go.
Getting taken. My sleeper pick in terms of tight end, I went Antonio Gates. Now, injuries have slowed him down. It's almost poor coaching and even worse quarterback play over the last few years. But Mike McCoy over there really should be able to make the offense work and Phillip Rivers be a lot better. You're talking about a fantasy-wise, a team that everybody is down on in terms of the San Diego Chargers. And I look at what McCoy's done since he's been in the National Football League, and I'd like his track record here to be able to turn San Diego around, especially on offense. Now, there's no wide receiver depth to speak of there, and Rivers knows Gates well. Gates is going to be a touchdown vulture in that red zone because, like we said, they don't have anybody. They're right now they're talking Vincent Brown and Floyd there. That's it. Those are your wide receiver options.
Disappointing. I don't even know who those people are.
I know.
I took one of them in a draft, too.
Yeah, because your hand has been forced.
Yeah.
So that's, I really like Antonio Gates, and you can get him in the 9th or 10th round right now, which I think is really, really good value for a flyer here. It's a late-round flyer.
Certainly lost a step, but not that many steps
no.
to be taken that late.
No.
For a late-round flyer, I like both of the Cincinnati tight ends, actually.
Gresham and Eifert.
I like Gresham and Eifert, yep. I don't know if there will be that much difference between the two as far as production goes.
Yeah. It
probably Gresham ends up, just based on last few years alone, getting more of the looks.
Mm-hmm.
But with Dalton not having the big arm, kind of being a game manager, they go to tight ends a lot, and Gresham's a guy who's had 800 yards receiving the past couple years and
mm-hmm.
gets looks in the end zone. And a guy who is very sure-handed, both of them, very
mm-hmm.
sure-handed. And the ball gets thrown to him, they can go up and get it.
Mm-hmm. Now, my avoid pick, Greg Olsen out of Carolina. Most of these pre-rank systems have him as a top six tight end right now. I love Cam Newton. I love Steve Smith, but I do not like Olsen. He has never shown the capability to be a high target, high reception guy. He's been a boomer bust. I've used him off the waiver wire a few times the last few years. Haven't enjoyed my experiences with him. He may steal a few TDs here or there, but not enough to justify being taken as the sixth tight end overall. I still think you're better suited finding value either really, really early in the tight end game or waiting a while and taking a guy like Antonio Gates or a flyer on Jared Cook out of St. Louis.
Martellus Bennett
in Chicago. There's a lot of guys who have a higher upside that haven't been in the league as long or on different offenses than a Greg Olsen who hasn't shown me much of anything in the last few years.
I couldn't agree with you. I don't know why people are so high on Greg Olsen.
I have no idea how he's been pre-ranked so high by Yahoo, ESPN, CBS. I've seen it everywhere. It's pretty remarkable.
I think he's rated so high because people are expecting Cam Newton to make that huge next step.
Yeah.
But Cam Newton hasn't shown that he ever wants to throw to
Greg exactly.
Olsen.
He's never been a high target guy, and ever.
So my... avoid
mm-hmm.
Kyle Rudolph. Don't like that guy. It's not that I don't like Kyle Rudolph. I think he could...
You had some bad experiences.
Yeah. No, I certainly have. I like Kyle Rudolph in a different offense.
Okay.
I don't like Kyle Rudolph with Christian Ponder as his quarterback.
Don't like anything with Christian Ponder as the quarterback.
And I think we differ a little bit in thinking that Kyle Rudolph is going to get all the red zone looks, and he might because he's big, but I think... Christian Ponder will try and make use of Greg Jennings as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he might end up seeing more targets in the red zone than you seem to think he will. And that's, I guess, the only reason I don't like him is because he's not going to rack up yardage for you. He's going to be a guy you're going to be relying on touchdowns for.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a dangerous game relying on touchdowns.
It's a dangerous game relying on a tight end, and that's why as good as the value on Jimmy Graham is, as well as he has done, I don't like taking a guy like that so early because it is really, it's kind of a death knell to rely on a tight end that early
mm-hmm.
in your draft. You're talking about passing up, starting everything else, starting running back, you know, a top two wide receiver, a top three quarterback to get a tight end.
And the gap between Jimmy Graham and, say, Antonio Gates, who's going in the 10th round,
yeah.
It's not huge. It's not as huge as taking Calvin Johnson over, you know, ending up with your second wide receiver, Anquan Boldin or something.
Yeah, they're all starters in terms of tight ends. And you're getting better value, like you mentioned, with Gates in the 10th, taking a starting tight end, then you would be taking, you know, your fifth wide receiver. So you can wait and get away with something like that, and you shouldn't even feel bad about it. I actually think it's a proper strategy. I just wish some of our fellow league mates would have listened.
Mm. But they didn't because they're not.
They're not the gurus, and there is a reason for that. So there you have it, your wide receiver tight end breakdown. Lots more in terms of fantasy football this upcoming season. NFL slate kicking off in 1 week. We'll be picking games next week as well as giving you our fantasy plays for the week. Similar feel to this throughout the regular season of the NFL. Send your questions, comments, concerns at RidingThePine3 on Twitter, Facebook.com/RidingThePine for your fantasy questions, sit, start questions, advice, waiver wire pickups, whatever you may have. We welcome those questions and comments everywhere. Get to them. We'll either answer them live on Twitter or on the Facebook page, or we'll save them for the podcast and we'll answer them before. Obviously, you can have the podcast before game time so you can make those roster adjustments as need be.
Yeah, and we will even answer questions that people have from the league that we are in.
No problem.
The RTP leagues, because there's literally a 0% chance any of you wins this league.
So take that. So we're here to help. Thanks for joining us. That's all we got for this week. We'll see you next time. Get ready for football, everybody. It's going to be a fun season. We'll see you next week for Riding the Pine.